You're listening to Around Comics, episode 159. For listening to another Monday edition of Around Comics, the comic culture podcast. I'm Christopher Niesman, and I'll be your guide for the next hour plus of comic book news, information, and entertainment. We've got a pretty cool show planned for you today. As you know, we're in our month of heroes, where we've been working with the Hero Initiative to provide a series of interviews with board members from Hero or creators that are involved with the Hero Initiative. And today, you get to hear Tom Caters and myself talk with Hero Initiative board member and comics legend Roy Thomas. That'll be in just a few moments. We also get you ready for the week ahead with new trade paperback and single issue releases. Sal keeps us informed on the week's happenings in Wire to Wire comic book news. Jeremy Mullins has more webcomic recommendations. Will Piper's here to talk about new DVDs and his cult DVD pick of the week. Tom Caters returns as the Answer Man, and the Quiet Panelologists have their letter C in their A to Z of British comics. All of that and more is next on Around Comics. Before we get to our talk with Roy Thomas, I wanted to remind everyone about this month's edition of The Club. And if you're unfamiliar with The Club, basically each month one of the regular Around Comics panel members picks one CD, one DVD, and one trade paperback for the rest of the panel and hopefully the listeners to read, listen, and watch. And then at the end of the month, we get together and discuss all of those picks. Tom Caters had this month's pick, and his CD is The Hour of the Bewilderbeast by a Badly Drawn Boy. His movie is Safe Men, starring Sam Rockwell and Steve Zahn, and his trade paperback is We Three. And right now, InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, We Three, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $8.44. You can check out Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's series that the Atlanta Journal-Constitution called Startling, Disturbing, and Perhaps Enlightening, a Provocative Tale. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. So check out We Three, and if you go to InStockTrades.com, make sure and tell them that you heard about it on Around Comics. Comics legend Roy Thomas was the first successor to Stan Lee to fill the role of editor-in-chief at Marvel Comics. Before his arrival in New York and a brief stop at DC, Thomas was the editor of the fanzine Alter Ego, a role Thomas has returned to. As either an editor or writer, Thomas has helped guide comics and comics continuity for decades. Best known for his work on Conan, The Avengers, The Uncanny X-Men, The Invaders, The All-Star Squadron, Infinity Inc., and a host of others, Roy Thomas has served as both creator and historian of comics for over four decades. As part of our Month of Heroes, in association with the Hero Initiative, here is myself, Tom Caters, and Mr. Roy Thomas. Thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
Well, I want to start looking at your career. It's kind of interesting because you've come really kind of full circle. You started out with Alter Ego, working in fanzines, and now you're back working with Alter Ego as the editor and contributing writer. And I just wanted to get kind of some of your thoughts on fandom in general and how it's changed from your beginnings with Alter Ego and present day.
Well, it was a whole different world that more than 45 years ago, when Jerry Bale, with my help, started Alter Ego. I mean, there was almost no information at that time known about the comics, except, you know, what was in the heads of individual people. I mean, the companies themselves, if you had asked them, the chances are they couldn't have given you a very clear picture of their history. I mean, the most famous example is that people like Don and Maggie Thompson, Maggie now being senior editor of Comic Buyer's Guide, they tried to find out what were the several hundred comics that had been in that four-color series, you know, that changed characters every week or so. You know, one issue would be about a movie adaptation, one would be a humorous thing, and this and that. It turned out that Dell or Western had no list itself, and so they ended up having to do the research basically for the company rather than being able to consult company records. Nowadays, of course, you could pick up a copy of the price guide every year, or there are other price guides, the Dover Street one, there are other price guides around, or you can go online perhaps and find something. And you can look up not everything about comics, but a fantastic amount of information which will list almost every comic book made in the United States during a period of a half a century, well over a half a century now. At that time, there just wasn't anything like that. And fandom, I think, is deeply responsible for that, because the comics publishers, as well as its creative personnel, had no more interest in that than, say, movie studios tend to have, you know, in their own history. They just don't do it.
Sort of along the same lines, one of my favorite things that you've worked on recently is I love the All-Star Companions that you've put out through Tomorrow's. Was that something that you were sort of inspired to do just from fandom, or was it a concern just to get a record down on exactly how those All-Star comics were put together?
Well, it's a mixture of both. I have a general interest in comic book history. I'm especially interested in the heroic comics, but that's just my particular area of preferred specialization. It doesn't mean that it's worth any more or less than the history of humor comics or westerns or, you know, sadomasochism or any other field. That's just my particular interest. So I'm interested in it as sort of an historian. After all, that was my major in college. I taught a little history, you know, over the years, on the one hand. On the other hand, it's also a fanish thing, I suppose, because I was a fan of the comics, so I'm just combining my two interests. Sometimes I do things in Alter Ego or cover things in Alter Ego that I wasn't that familiar with myself, so it's not just a nostalgia magazine. It's really an historical magazine with a hint of nostalgia, but I'm really not interested in just doing a nostalgia trip. If that was all it was, I think I, you know, probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I was a history major in college as well, and those books definitely appeal to the comic / history fan, because I love sort of the minutia of how certain things happen and sort of the history of how all that stuff sort of happened. So,
well, obviously, a book like that and the other books of that sort, there are, you know, books of that sort about Superman and Batman and others in the works, both from Tomorrow's and other places, and they're rather esoteric. They certainly have, all of the Tomorrow's books, for example, have much more information in them than you would expect, than the average reader just buying off the stand, certainly, or the average reader, say, has a little nostalgic interest in the comics of the 40s, or the 50s, or the 60s, or even 70s or 80s. The average person who reads that is would only be interested in, you know, a small percentage of that. Oh, he'd want to know, oh, yeah, here's a little something about Green Lantern, or here's something here and there. But he wouldn't care about who all the artists were, or even the letterers, or that some of the issues were published out of order, or anything like that. That's the kind of thing that goes beyond, but we're in the business of doing the history, and then somebody else can come along and have that as reference for them to come along and write perhaps a simpler book. You know, we're all sort of being reference for each other.
Sure. Whenever you came in, there was, you know, a much more limited amount of history in comics to look back on, and you were one of the people that was pretty instrumental in bringing back Golden Age characters from the 40s, mostly the 40s and 50s, both at Marvel with the Invaders and then your work with the JSA.
Well, Julie Schwartz and Gardner Fox, I have to give them credit for actually starting the ball rolling. Other people had sort of brought the characters back from time to time. I mean, Timely had done it in the late 40s, only about 4 years after they had died. And then, of course, Julian, Don Broom, and Bob Kander and others had brought in new versions of the old heroes, like Flash and Green Lantern and the Atom. But the real impetus of this was the Earth 2 thing that was begun by Gardner and Julie in the Flash number 123, which suddenly brought back the actual Golden Age character and showed that as being a somebody in a different world. Although, you know, in a different sense, this is one area where, in a certain sense, Marvel actually had primacy, because the first real character from the Golden Age to come back in what is officially or semi-officially the Silver Age is probably the Submariner back in Fantastic Four number 4. He was a character who had been specifically said to have been around in World War II and to have been in comic books even in World War II, even if in the same world as Fantastic Four. And he came back in, 62? And it was, I guess Flash came out quite first, and Marvel was just a little bit after that. But anyway, they are both, those were the two, I think, key elements in reviving the characters. I came along later, maybe, and I just did a wholesale, you know, where they would bring back one character or two characters, and eventually the Justice Society. I would bring back everybody.
Two of my favorite series, actually. I was a little too young at the time when they came out, but I've gone back and gotten all of them. I love the All-Star Squadron, and I love Infinity Inc. One of my favorite
things... You're depressing me to say you were too young to read the All-Star Squadron.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's really depressing.
I went back and got all of them late, you know. I remember, because I've always had sort of an interest in history, and I loved reading those books because... One of the cool things about them is they told a great story in and of themselves, but also if you were interested in how they tied into sort of this long history of this group, there was more for you to go look for or to understand beyond just the really cool story that it was telling.
And I was trying to tie it into real history as well, so I was sort of balancing a lot of balls in the air, and I never succeeded in selling, after the first few issues, maybe a huge number of comic books, but I'm still prouder of working on that series than I am in, you know, most things I did.
Yeah, and
I also had more fun. I was prouder of it, but I also had more fun than with most series. So that's really my, as much as even though the Marvel work would be, if anything in comics is important, then I always, you know, put that in between quotation marks and maybe even, you know, extra quotation marks. But if anything of my work would have ever been important or influential in any way, I suppose the Marvel work, you know, in the 60s and 70s is the most important, doing Conan and, you know, even certain things in Avengers or X-Men or whatever. But as far as just myself enjoying it, probably that reached the peak in the first couple of years of All-Star Squadron. It kind of went bad near the end with that damn crisis. But other than that, up to that point, it was all pleasure.
Well, I was going to say, I think you're underselling it a bit when you said you would bring back, a lot of characters. Because I remember issues of All-Star Squadron where there's like 20 characters that just get thrown in, which I loved, you know, reading it the first time around. But
sitting around in the Perisphere. You know, I'd have this meeting where they're all sitting around in rows in the Perisphere and make Rick Hoberg, I think that was his first issue, drawing All-Star Squadron, and he had to draw about 40 characters. But he liked it, and if an artist didn't want to do that, they just should stay away from that series. And it did get harder and harder to get a good artist on that series.
Everyone's like, how many do you have to
draw? There weren't big royalties coming in, and you really had to kind of, you know, either want to do it or be relatively new or something like that in order to do it. But I never had, you know, the artists who did come in and do it, I never had anybody complain to me, you know, you're killing me with the characters there. But on the other hand, I knew that a guy like Bill Kane or somebody was never going to want to do a book like that, you know, because he wouldn't have wanted to do Justice League, let alone All-Star Squadron.
Yeah,
that's a lot of characters.
Most artists didn't like drawing big groups. Now, Gerard Perez wouldn't have minded it, or a couple of other people here and there. Jerry Ordway seemed to get a kick out of it when he was doing it in the early early days and so forth, and always had an affinity for groups. But unless you have a particular affinity for groups, you were not going to want to do a book like All-Star Squadron, where the sky was the limit, and at any time you could suddenly have dozens of characters flying around, bumping into each other in the sky, and an equal number of villains, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that, and we'll touch on Crisis here, I think that that's an interesting case of DC trying to kind of clean up their continuity and get things more on one page, where you're kind of the patron saint of continuity for a lot of fans, and I think it's unfortunate that a lot of the series that you were working on and characters that you were reestablished kind of got caught under the bus of Crisis.
Well, I just saw that that was what they wanted to do, and at one stage, I don't remember who it was, but somebody fairly high in the DC level told me that they wouldn't do this if I really objected. And I said, well, I don't object. I said, first of all, of course, it's not my decision because I'm just one guy doing a couple of books. They weren't the big books or anything. But I said, I'm glad to cooperate in any way. There's only one thing I want. When the series is over, some way or other, I want to be able to continue to use all those characters, you know, Superman, Batman, and that type of thing. I want them to be able to stay in the All-Star Squadron, even if it has to be put in a pocket universe or whatever it is. Oh, fine, no problem. And, of course, they then reneged on that later on, and all of a sudden they decided, no, you can't use those because they don't exist anymore. And what happened to our agreement? Well, you know, it was no longer operable, as they used to say in the Watergate days. You know, it just wasn't Marv Wolfman and George Perez who were doing the Crisis series. This was people at, you know, other levels. I had no quarrel with Marv and George. I would have killed that book and, you know, strangled it in his crib any time I could have. For some reason, I wrote so many memos. I think a lot of them were, because I was asked to, and I was dealing with so many characters, and a lot of them were reprinted in this omnibus version they did of The Crisis, you know, about a year or so ago. It was kind of interesting to see, and I can sort of see why Marv thought I was enthusiastic about The Crisis. But of course, in point of fact, it was always exactly the opposite. I would have, you know, I would have blown that up any time I could have. I just felt like, I may as well go along with it because, you know, the horse is going in that direction anyway. You're either going to ride on his back or you're going to be dragged along by the tail, you know. So I went along with it and got kind of betrayed by the higher ups and people say, aren't you excited now that Earth 2 is coming back? And I say, no, it's a couple of decades too late for me to give a damn.
I was just about to ask you about that.
I don't even read those. No, I wouldn't even read that stuff, you know, let alone. The only way I'm interested in reading any is if I'm writing some of it, then I can, you know, then I'll get interested in being part of a team. But I'm no longer interested in comics as a spectator sport.
Oh, there you go.
I like comics. I love the medium, but I just don't. You know, and I'm. It's wonderful to see all the directions which they've branched out with adult comics, and in the best and worst sense of the word. I'm happy to see all those things and all the various genres and styles and so forth, and you know that have come about. In some ways, this is the epitome of what we used to say back in the early days of fandom, when Ron Foss and Jerry Bales and some of the rest of us used to write back and forth and say, "Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful someday if there are adult comics?" Well, be careful what you wish for. You know, because nowadays they, you know, you have all that, but I don't know. I guess the world is a better place for having all those genres, but at the same time, I think some of the innocence of comics has kind of been lost, and now it's become kind of this big business. And I don't know. There's a part of me that isn't that wild about the idea of comics being legitimate. You know, I sort of liked it better when it was kind of this off the wall, under the table kind of.
Something a respectable person shouldn't be reading.
If they'd been respectable, you know, our parents would have been doing it, you know, and they weren't, and that was our little world. And then all of a sudden, you also tell them, oh, it's great in foreign countries, in Japan, you can see adults, you know, proudly reading comic books, manga, whatever, on the subways or whatever. Well, you know, I don't really care to do that particularly. You know, let them read that, and I'm currently reading Moby Dick again. You know, so they can all read their comics, and I'll be the guy reading reading an actual book or something. I don't know.
Well, I got to tell you, occasionally I read comics on the train in Chicago, and I get odd looks all the time. So it's not too.
I'm glad to hear it.
It's not too respectable yet. I mean, no.
Good. good. I hope it never becomes totally respectable.
They should be read in your basement alone and nowhere else.
Right, with a flashlight under the covers.
Well, talking kind of about the innocence of comics and kind of step back to your early days at Marvel, at a really nice conversation with Gene Colan and his wonderful wife in New York earlier this year, and she had mentioned that Gene's love of the early days at Marvel and that entire group, and I'm sure that you were included, that there was a very common vision at Marvel in kind of what Stan had set up, and this like childhood fascination of these great characters doing these deeds of good and beating evil. What was it, you know, that feeling of you know, childhood wonder in those early years?
Well, I think actually most of it, not for me so much, but for most of those people, Stan, Gene, and the others, Jack, I still think mainly it was a way of making a living. I for example, Stan Lee might have read comic books, you know, before he came to work at Timely in 1941, but my God, when he stopped being just a fan and became a professional, he was like 18, 19 years old. And, Gene Colan, too, you know, as a in his late teens or whatever he was, from that time on, when he entered the field, I think he may have liked comics, he may have admired some of the other artists, and sometimes he may have enjoyed what he was doing, but I can't, and I know that Stan managed to imbue at least a lot of the artists and writers with a real enthusiasm for what they were doing, but I think they were still mostly thinking in terms of doing it as a business, a way of making a living that was fairly enjoyable and that Stan could make, you know, kind of exciting but getting you enthusiastic about what they're doing. But it was left to sort of my generation and after to be the ones who actually, when they got done, would then sit down and read the stories and kind of enjoy them. I can't imagine Dean Colan, say, ever reading a Daredevil and you know, reading this once it was printed and sitting down and reading it as a story or reading a story that somebody else wrote, a story, say, by Stan and Jack or something, you know, and reading it as a comic book. They would have always been, he would have been looking at it as, what's the art? What did Jack do in this place? How is the story being told, you know? I think once you get into the professional thing, it's very hard to keep thinking about it as if you're a fan. And guys like Stan and Gene and Kirby, they had been, since the 40s, you know, and in Jack's case, since the 30s, they had been professionals and therefore couldn't really look at comics in that way.
Well,
I think so. We all did get imbued, I think, with some of Stan's spirit to some extent. But at the same time, you know, there was a kind of a holding off. Like somebody like Maurice Bevers, she was never going to think that superhero comics were anything but silly, you know. And I think that's true with a lot of the artists. And I think a lot of them would have rather been drawing something besides superheroes because, you know, people who could fly. Well, that's not what you went to art school for, in general cases back then.
And that is part one of our two-part conversation with comics legend Roy Thomas. I want to thank him for spending some time with us, and hopefully you'll come back for part two. And as our Month of Heroes rolls on, hope you consider donating to the Hero Initiative. It is a great cause, and it's very easy to do. All you have to do is go to aroundcomics.com. There's a PayPal link on our homepage. If you don't want to pay through PayPal, you can go to www.heroinitiative.org, or you can call 310-909-7809. There's plenty of other payment options at their site, and you can also learn more about the Hero Initiative there and how important they are to the lives of veteran creators in need. And I also wanted to pass along a great idea and a great story from one of our forum members. This comes from Jason Tucker, and his company, like a lot of the companies that we work for, look for charities to donate to. And the Hero Initiative is a federally chartered charity, so it makes it very easy for companies to donate to them as tax write-offs. And Jason Tucker and his company donated $300 to the Hero Initiative. If you know that your company does charitable donations, take a couple minutes and suggest the Hero Initiative.
Too feeble to let go. you want to buy the hand? Should have stopped this long ago.
Wire to Wire comic book news top headlines for the week of December 10th, 2007. Marvel Entertainment and Del Rey Manga, an imprint of Ballantine Books at the Random House Publishing Group, announced plans to publish two new manga series based on Marvel Entertainment's highly popular X-Men series. The manga, created with the cooperation and consultation of Marvel editors, will take the classic characters from the X-Men series and reimagine them in a manga style. The first project, scripted by the husband and wife team of Rana Telmeyer, writer and illustrator of the Babysitter's Club graphic novels, and Dave Roman, creator of the comic Agnes Quill, will focus specifically on the X-Men team. Indonesian artist Anzu will illustrate the two-volume series, which will go on sale in spring of 2009. The final chapter of the story Kryptonite, written by Darwin Cook and illustrated by Tim Sale, is now scheduled to appear in Superman Confidential number 11, scheduled to arrive in stores on January 16th. The story that was solicited to appear in Superman Confidential number 11, written by B. Clay Moore, with art and cover by Phil Hester and Andy Parks, will now appear in Superman Confidential number 12. This issue is solicited in the December previews to arrive in stores in February. Over the last 2 months, the Emerald City Comic-Con has added over 50 new guests, continuing its commitment to being the premier comic book and pop culture convention in the Pacific Northwest. Creators include Arthur Suedum, Brian Michael Bendis, Derek Kirk Kim, Phil Noto, Ed Brubaker, Kari Andrews, Nat Jones, Mike Oeming, Clayton Crane, Derek Robertson, Herb Trimp, Bill Willingham, Daniel Easter, Rick Remender, and many more. DC Comics kicks off its look ahead to new collected editions and other titles for summer 2008 with the titles scheduled for release in May and June. These include collected editions from the DC Universe, Vertigo, and Wildstorm, as well as new manga from CMX and original works from Minx. Titles from the DC Universe include The Batman, The Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul hardcover, Booster Gold 52 Pickup, the first collection from the Hot New series, The Starman Omnibus Volume 1 hardcover, collecting the classic series for the first time in hardcover, and All-Star Batman and Robin, The Boar Wonder Volume 1 hardcover, featuring 9 issues from Frank Miller and Jim Lee's smash hit series. Vertical titles on the list include The Absolute Sandman Volume 3 hardcover, Demo Trade paperback, and Why the Last Man Volume 10, Whys and Wherefore. Highlights from Wildstorm include the Heroes trade paperback, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Black Dossier the Absolute hardcover, and Ex Machina Volume 1 Deluxe Edition. Submissions are now being accepted for consideration by the judges of the 2008 Will Eisner Comics Industry Awards. Publishers wanting to submit entries should send one copy each of the comics or books and include a cover letter indicating what is being submitted and in what categories. The tentative categories include Best Single Issue, Best Short Story, Best Continuing Comic Book Series, Best Limited Comic Book Series, Best New Series, Best Title Aimed at a Younger Audience, Best Humor Publication, Best Anthology, Best Graphic Album, New Material, Best Graphic Album Reprint, Best Reality-Based Work, Best Archival Collection, Best U.S. Edition and Foreign Material, Best Writer, and others. The judges may add, delete, or combine categories at their discretion. The cover letter should include both a mailing address and an email address. Wednesday, December 19th, is the date when 2000 AD leaps into the future of global comic book enjoyment and becomes the first sci-fi comic in the world to be available weekly in both print and online versions. The lucky readers in the UK have long had their thrill power hit within their printed prog every week without fail, but it is you, our friends across the world, who have had to endure higher shipping costs and a longer wait. Well, no more. You will now be able to download the Galaxy's Greatest Comic direct to your computer just 1 week after the printed version has hit UK stores. And being a download, it'll be quicker, more topical, more adaptable. You'll even be able to view it on your Apple iPod, and best of all, considerably cheaper. However, if you still enjoy the feel of a warm prog in your hands, you will still be able to receive the printed version as normal. It just won't be as quick and easy. In March, DC will release Justice League, The New Frontier Special, a 48-page collection with stories from Darwin Cook, Jay Bone, and David Bullock, including New Frontier, The Lost Chapter, which shows the massive battle between Superman and Batman. Other characters getting the spotlight include Wonder Woman, Black Canary, Sergeant Rock, and more. On his blog, artist Fred Van Lente invited fans to return with us again to the early days of the X-Men for all new solo adventures of Wolverine and Kitty Pryde. Van Lente will be joined by artist Andrea DeVito when Wolverine First Class debuts in March. Just like Jeff Parker's X-Men First Class, Wolverine First Class will be set within the continuity of Marvel's Mutants past, but the stories will not be reinventing the wheel. However, do expect to experience old-school vibe mixed with an upbeat sense of hope and triumph in the stories. Also in March, Marvel will bring back the Defenders with the debut of the Last Defenders miniseries written by Joe Casey. As for the kind of book it'll be, the Defenders have never been definitive, said series scribe Casey. The concept within the Marvel Universe has always been kind of ephemeral, I think to its detriment. So we're going to lock it down, make them as solid a team as they've ever been. After all, as the title suggests, this will be the last, the final version of this team. Robert Kirkman, writer of Invincible, Marvel Zombies, The Astounding Wolfman, Ultimate X-Men, The Walking Dead, and the upcoming Haunt, created with Todd McFarlane, has been writing comics professionally for over 6 years, but has never had a website. Until now. Visit www.kirkmania.com. View the Kirk board, read the Kirk news, sign up for the Kirk spam. It's Kirktastic. Be sure to check back for exclusive announcements, news, and previews. Those were your top headlines. Thank you for listening, good night, and happy reading.
Comics aren't just in comic shops and bookstores anymore. You can find thousands of webcomics online. And Jeremy Mullins is here to save you hours of searching the internet by telling us where to find the best and brightest in the ever-changing world of webcomics.
It's the holiday time. Usually that means when you're out shopping for groceries, at the mall looking for gifts for your family and friends, hey, there's happy holiday music playing. But I don't know if it's because I live in an art town or what, but everywhere I went this week, it was like melancholy Central. I've been looking so long at these pictures of you that I almost believe that they're everywhere. It was like The Cure, The Smiths, Magnetic Fields, Morrissey. Everywhere I went, I was like just bombarded with all this melancholy music. And it reminded me of a webcomic, actually a web graphic novel, the world's first web graphic novel called Nowhere Girl by Justine Shaw. It's essentially about this character named Jamie, this young woman, who's kind of confused, but very calmly and methodically, she's making peace with the world and planning her own suicide. She's just trying to achieve closure before committing the final act, and that's essentially what the story is about. At the time, Nowhere Girl was a breakthrough in webcomics. When it hit, there had been nothing like it. Everything was fairly crude on the web, but Nowhere Girl, the artwork in Nowhere Girl, is fairly polished. It was a realistic style. The content was, you know, subtle and serious, and it was like nothing that had come before. Also at that time, this is, you know, in the early 2000s, people felt that longer works would be completely unreadable on the web because people wouldn't want to sit that long looking at the computer screen. And I understand that dial-up was still prevalent at the time, but, you know, Miss Shaw just shattered that notion. You know, hundreds of thousands of people read this comic, and it was, her site was very accommodating. Images were quick to load. All the artwork fit very concisely within a, you know, the standard web window size, so you didn't have to scroll left and right and down. It was very convenient, and It paid off. In 2003, Ms. Shaw was the very first web cartoonist to be nominated for an Eisner Award. If you're a regular listener to this segment, you know I like award winners, and Ms. Shaw racked them up. Nowhere Girl was also nominated for many Web Cartoonist Choice Awards, and she cleaned house. Outstanding comic, outstanding website design, outstanding dramatic comic, outstanding reality comic. She just racked them all up. So if you're of a melancholy mood this holiday season, pop on your Cure CD and go visit NowhereGirl.com. NowhereGirl.com. There's a bit of good news. If you like the first graphic novel, there's a follow-up. Part 2 is there. A second graphic novel is also on the site as well. So, happy holidays. And for Around Comics, I'm Jeremy W. Mullins.
Jeremy Mullins is a professor of sequential art at the Savannah College of Art and Design. You can find more about the school and their programs of study at www.scad.edu. And a special note for not just Jeremy's segment, but Will Pfeiffer's DVD segment, we now have a sticky thread on the forum that is keeping track of Jeremy's webcomic recommendations, complete with links to the URLs for each webcomic, and on Will's cult DVD picks to an IMDb link there. So if you're interested in checking out some of the past selections in webcomics and DVD, go and check it out on the forum. And that's located, of course, at www.aroundcomics.com.
The A to Z of British comic books continues with the letter C.
What have you got for C in the A to Z of British comics, John?
I've got Captain Britain.
Ooh!
Yes. He first appeared in Captain Britain Weekly, issue 1, October 13th, 1976. And he was created by Chris Claremont, yes, he of X-Men fame, ooh, and Herb Trimp. Although he's probably mostly known for being written by Alan Moore and drawn by Alan Davis.
You know, I thought Alan Moore and Alan Davis created Captain Britain.
Well, you were wrong.
I was.
He was meant to be the British equivalent of Captain America. He was endowed with powers by the magician Merlin, and he was assigned to uphold the laws of Britain, such as tea time. 9 to 5, 5 days a week working hours, as Bo. Yeah, he did that.
Yeah, teenage pregnancies.
These are all the laws of Britain.
Make sure that everyone had a thatched cottage and lived in the countryside.
Yeah, and that's bad teeth.
That's right, yeah. What are you saying?
Nothing. Sorry. It's just that I was looking at you when I thought of it.
All right, okay, thanks. Captain Britain, though, didn't he appear in Excalibur for a bit?
He was in Excalibur for a bit, and as you can tell, I haven't done my research, so I'm just going to agree that, yes, he was in Excalibur.
All right.
And he was also the Knights of Pendragon and New Excalibur. He was in that. Do you know that he has a fraternal twin?
Does he?
Who is Betsy Braddock,
oh,
who is Psylocke.
Well, I'll be. She's in the X-Men.
As well.
Blimey.
Did you know that Alan Moore had been in dispute with Marvel Comics, and that was over Captain Britain, because they'd reprinted some of his Marvel UK work without his permission.
Really naughty.
And then blocked all further reprints.
Well, I'll be.
But you may think, but hang on, there is Captain Britain trade paperbacks out at the moment.
That's right, I've seen him in the shop.
Yeah, well, in 2002, Joe Quesada, he persuaded Alan Moore to let him reprint Captain Britain on the understanding that he'd received full credit, right?
Yeah.
But Alan Moore's credit was omitted to a printing error.
Oops.
And despite the fact that Joe Quesada apologised, Alan Moore declared he would no longer consider working for Marvel.
Blimey.
So that's my C, Captain Britain. What's your C, Matt?
Oh, well, my C is Crisis, John.
You can't have Crisis, that's American.
No, not Crisis as in Crisis on Infinite Earths or Infinite Crisis. This Crisis was a British comic published from 1988 to 1991 as an experiment by Fleetway to see if intellect, mature, politically and sociably aware comics were saleable in the United Kingdom. Originally, it was a 2000 AD spin-off and was actually science fiction based. And people like Garth Ennis, John McCrea, David Hine, Warren Pleece and Sean Phillips all worked on Crisis in those years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, though, obviously it only lasted, like, 3 years, so as an experiment by Fleetway to see if intellect, mature, politically and socially aware comics were sellable in the United Kingdom, do you know what?
It was not a success.
No, I think the experiment failed, man.
Yeah, and we are proof that sort of thing doesn't work over here.
Yeah, there you go.
Ta-da!
So that's C, then.
So that's C. That'll do.
And next week, we'll probably be doing D.
Probably.
Can you see a theme, John?
Yeah, hey. Wow.
Good, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say it's good, but definitely got a theme.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Ape Entertainment. And now available from Ape is the Fablewood Anthology Volume 1. It's a lavish 144-page original graphic novel containing 13 complete fantasy stories and featuring the art of Invincible artist Ryan Ottley, as well as alumni from Flight and Pop Gun anthologies. Fablewood covers a variety of themes within the fantasy genre, from slice of life to sword and sorcery. No fantasy fan should go without. For previews of some of the amazing art in the Fablewood anthology and tons of other Ape goodness, visit our friends at www.apecomics.com.
Hello, everyone. This is the part where you ask me questions and I answer them. But this week we have a special version, because this week I'm sitting on the couch with my girlfriend and she's going to ask me a question and I'm going to answer it to the best of my ability. Samantha, what's the question? Look at you. Look at you leaning up to the mic. Let's do it. Ask.
What?
Ask.
What is Mr. Flash's superpower?
He runs fast.
And what's the point?
Well, you've stunned me with the second half of that. The first half, easy to answer. Second half, not so much. What's the point?
Mm-hmm. What does he do with that?
What does he do? He fights villains. Like all superheroes, they're always fighting villains.
And what is the reason for the supervillains to always be fighting with the Flash?
Why? What's the reason?
Not why. Just what's the reason?
Yeah, not why. Yeah, okay. Inside joke. But yeah, what's the reason? They're bad. Is this how all women think about comic books? They're like analyzing it to that level of why people do things? What do you think of the fact that I even read comic books? Do you think I'm a man-child that's sort of like arrested in some sort of arrested development?
Well, I never knew that you read comic books until recently, and I guess I'm just surprised at how much knowledge you have about comic books.
What I'll say is I've been reading comics for a while, but also I feel as if I'm an individual who has... I don't have to make every conversation about comic books.
Yes.
So it wouldn't come up, because you're not interested. Yeah, are you interested in what I have to say about The Flash at all?
Yes.
You say that right now, but I guarantee you don't actually care at all.
I care because I care about you.
That's a very convenient answer to give as it's being recorded, but I know you don't.
The Flash is kind of fascinating, actually.
Oh, really? We've come full circle, because we started with you not under... So what are the reasons the Flash does what he does?
I think that the Flash is really concerned with social justice.
Really?
Yeah.
Social justice, like healthcare?
Healthcare, yes.
Labor unions?
Yes. Making sure that everyone has a job and that everybody has... benefits that
you're turning this into just a platform for your own political beliefs.
That's true, but I think that if you really looked closely at the Flash, you would
find... You really look closely at him?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
You told me once that the Flash was fighting for social justice.
Because he is the common man.
Yeah.
Who can run as fast as he wants.
And you can get a lot done if you run fast.
If you move fast, yeah, you could.
Yes. You can. The faster you move, the faster you get things done.
Sure.
Like fighting for the
but
common
isn't
man.
It true that like a lot of unions, like the Teamsters would just sort of like maybe being fast wouldn't they want to relax a bit because they if the Flash can move as fast as he wants, does that mean he gets to take like five times as many breaks?
Exactly, and his quality of life is much better.
His quality of life is much better.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good. That's a good take. That's good.
But what else is the Flash doing?
Besides
with his superpowers,
he's getting like dry cleaning fast. It's a joke. He's getting he's living life to the max. I think
and
you're
how
asking
does he live,
for things.
How does he live life to the max?
He loves his wife, his kids.
Who is his wife?
Linda Park. She was a reporter.
And
became a med student.
What does Linda Park want for the world?
They haven't gotten into that. You're making me feel like very inadequate with these sort of questions about something. Don't you want to ask me about how fast the Flash can run?
Well, how fast can the Flash run?
As fast as necessary for the story.
And what is the story?
That's the beauty. Whatever you want.
What do you want the story to be?
I don't answer a question with a question. It's getting awkward now. I have to sleep in the same bed with you in like about 15 minutes. If I'm lucky, I could end up on the
couch. If you were as fast as the Flash, then that might be awkward. But
oh.
I think.
Boo. That is the lame. That is such a lame. That joke's been made like 1,000 times.
I know. I don't know, but I know.
You lost a lot of credibility with a lot of people because that's real obvious.
Just so everyone knows, I have never made comic book jokes before.
Yeah, that was your first attempt. And it wasn't bad.
It's
the
obvious.
Execution. The execution wasn't terrible, but weak.
I'm still waiting for an answer.
On what?
What is it that the Flash does with his superpower of running very fast?
He helps people that can't help themselves.
And how is that different than everything that we stated?
I don't even know. We were walking. This is probably going to be the most boring part of the show. It's circular.
I think it's circular thoughts.
Circular. We're going around and around.
Okay, so
this is what we're at. This is where we're at now.
All right.
Inside.
Okay, so what is it about the Flash?
Stop! No, don't ask. You've asked me. You're gonna ask me what is it that the Flash does, and I've already told you he runs fast.
What is it that the Flash does that attracts you to his character?
He looks cool.
And that's it. That's all.
That's all you need. Come on. That's why you. That's why you're with this. Does that look cool? I got a sweater and boxers on. That's how I roll.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's just end this.
Alright.
Yeah. Say goodnight, Sam.
Good night, Sam.
Yeah.
When he's not writing the continuing adventures of Catwoman, Will Pfeiffer is a DVD and movie reviewer for the Rockford Register Star. Here's Will to tell us about what's happening in DVDs.
The biggest DVD release of the week, and one of the biggest of the year, is the long-awaited Blade Runner disc. Actually, that should be discs, plural, because Ridley Scott's 1982 sci-fi noir classic is available in several versions. They range from a simple recutting of the film with tweaked special effects, those damn wires on the flying police car finally gone, to a 5-disc collector's set that features multiple versions of the film and comes packaged in a replica of Harrison Ford's futuristic briefcase. My recommendation? Go for the briefcase. One, it contains a cool little toy police car, and two, well hell, it's Christmas! Also out this week is The Simpsons Movie. This summer's big screen adventure of America's favorite Google-eyed, jaundiced, four-fingered family. It's not as great as the best TV episodes, but it does harken back to the show's glory days. Plus, it's a thrill to see Homer accidentally destroy Springfield on a truly epic scale. Extras include a commentary track from the creators, and if you've listened to those on previous Simpsons DVDs, you know they're always fun and informative. This week's cult pick is Death Race 2000, the 1975 sci-fi satire produced by Roger Corman and directed by the late, great Paul Bartel. Set in the far-off future of the year 2000, it focuses on a cross-country race where drivers get bonus points for hitting pedestrians. Babies and old people are worth the most, which should give you some sense of the movie's dark sense of humor. David Carradine, Bill in the Kill Bill movies, is the movie's surprisingly moral hero, Frankenstein, but even more memorable is the villain, crazy gangster-type machine gun Joe Viterbo, played by a pre-Rocky Sylvester Stallone. As the announcer says, he's loved by thousands, hated by millions. Well, I'm Will Pfeiffer, and that's your pre-holiday DVD report. Happy Festivus to all, and to all a good night.
You can find Will's written reviews at the Rockford Register Star by visiting go.rrstar.com and going to the entertainment section. You can also visit Will's blog at willpfeiffer.com. And remember to read Catwoman every month. Now let's get you ready for the week ahead with new trade paperback releases. Here is Collected Comics Library's Chris Marshall.
Hey everybody, it's Chris, and I'm coming to you with a blistering headache this week. I don't know where it came from, but perhaps I got it while shoveling 7 inches of snow this morning. Anyway, let's get on with the list for this week. Let's start out with Marvel. And there's only a couple things in the preliminary list this week from Marvel, and that is X-Men, The Complete Onslaught, Epic Volume 1, the trade, collecting, well, just a whole lot of X-Men and a whole lot of the Onslaught storyline. Next up, we have X-Men Marauders trade paperback. This has also been solicited as X-Men Blinded by the Light trade paperback. In any event, this collects X-Men 200 through 204 and is $15. We also have Ultimate Fantastic Four Volume 9, The Silver Surfer trade, collecting Ultimate FF 42 through 46 for $14, and Avengers Classic is now on its 7th issue. A few other books coming out from Marvel that are not on the preliminary list, like I said, but we are expecting anyway. Marvel Masterworks Rawhide Kid Volume 2, this is the variant 87 if you collect the variants, collecting Rawhide Kid 26 through 35, that is for $55. X-Factor Heart of Ice Premier Hardcover, collecting X-Factor 18 through 24 for $20. Moon Knight Volume 2, Midnight Sun, the Premier Hardcover, collecting 7 through 13 for $20. Ultimate Spider-Man Venom, the Premier Hardcover, for $20, collecting Ultimate Spider-Man 33 through 39. Power Pack gets a hardcover, Volume 1. This collects Power Pack 1 through 4, Avengers and Power Pack Assemble 1 through 4, and X-Men and Power Pack 1 through 4 for $25. The Loner Secret Lives of Superheroes trade, collecting Loners 1 through 6 for $15. And then finally, Marvel Adventures Fantastic Four Volume 1, the hardcover, collecting Marvel Adventures Fantastic Four 1 through 12 for $25. That book has been delayed and delayed and delayed, and I'm mentioning it anyway. I probably mentioned it before, but we have not seen it, and hopefully we'll see it this week, or at least hopefully by the end of the year, right? Anyway, let's move over to DC. We've got a slew of books coming out from them. Tales of the Multiverse Batman Vampire, the trade, for $20, collecting a whole lot of cool stories, if you ask me. Batman and Dracula Red Rain, Batman Crimson Mist, and Batman Bloodstorm. Countdown Special, the Atom 80-page Giant number 2, is out this week, as expected, collecting Super Team Family 13 and 14 for $5. The Spectre Tales of the Unexpected trade for $15, collecting Tales of the Unexpected 1 through 8. Legion of Superheroes Eye for an Eye, the trade, for $18, collecting Legion of the Superheroes 1 through 6. That is from the year 1984. So a little classic Legion there for you. Hellblazer Bloodlines for $20, collecting Hellblazer 49, featuring a very special Constantine Christmas. And 52 through 55 and 59 through 61. Moving down to Image, we've got Hawaiian Dick Volume 1, Birds of Paradise trade. That is a new printing from B. Claymore and Company. And it contains more than 50 pages of exclusive bonus material. That is only for $15. And if you've never read Hawaiian Dick, I highly recommend it. Amaze Inc. and Slave Labor Graphics have Midnight Sun, the trade paperback, out for $15. Moonstone has Buckaroo Banzai Volume 1, Return of the Screw Trade for 17. Tomorrow's has a couple books out this week, including Alter Ego 74 and Right Now number 17. Both of those are $7. And we're also expecting from Tomorrow's Modern Masters Volume 13, Mark Schultz, for $15. We'll see if that actually comes out this Wednesday. And finally, rounding it out this week, Zenoscope Entertainment has 7, the hardcover, for $35. This, of course, is the prequel series to the movie. Not a whole lot of news came out this week, except for the fact that DC has released their trade paperback list for all of summer, right from May up until really September. If you really want to get the full story on everything, I'm going to be going over that in my podcast this week, so come on over to the Collected Comics Library, and that is going to be my topic of the week. But one book you probably should know about is the whole Absolute League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the Black Dossier, that is going to be coming out this summer. It's funny, if you look in your Black Dossier, if you own it already, you'll notice that it has 208 pages, where the solicitation said 200 pages. Well, that's a little off. I've done some searching around the internet, and Alan Moore, in a few different sites, has been quoted as saying that the Absolute Edition will have bonus, quote-unquote, DVD extra material and all the sort of regular stuff that you come to expect from an Absolute, such as an introduction, sketches, preliminary work, you know, whatever that Alan Moore deems to be putting in there. But, you know, it is going to be a larger book. It's, of course, will be oversized, and, of course, it will be $99. Probably come in a slipcase, as all Absolutes do. So look for that later on in the summer. As we go throughout the months here leading up to the release of that book, I'm sure more information will be coming out as to what exactly will be included in that Absolute Edition. So that'll about do it for this Monday's Trade 5. For Around Comics, I'm Chris Marshall, Collected Comics Library.
Chris Marshall is the host of the Collected Comics Library podcast. You can find the podcast, release schedules, and checklist of everything collected at collectedcomicslibrary.com.
Hello, we got the new releases for 12/19/2007, so let's get into it. I'm going to just deal with the stories I like. If you want to read the entire list, you can find it at a ton of places. So let's get right into Dark Horse. We got Umbrella Academy Apocalypse Suite number 4 from Gerard Way and Gabriel Baugh. I have loved the first two issues. The third one was a bit of a letdown. I got a lot of faith that it's going to pick up again. Love this series so far, so if you haven't got it so far, maybe wait for the trade. Sorry, Gerard. Sorry, Gabriel. Just told people to wait for the trade. But I love it. From DC Comics, we got Birds of Prey, number 113. It's the debut of Sean McKeever writing the story. Since she writes like a woman, I think it will probably be good. We got Checkmate, volume 2, number 21. Greg Rucka, you know how we feel about him. Some of us have a man crush on him. Let's not go any deeper into it. We have Countdown Arena, number 3. I've been pleasantly surprised with Countdown Arena. I really thought it was going to sort of devolve into pretty much really crappy fan fiction. But I give Keith Champagne and Scott McDaniel a lot of credit for writing and drawing a book that has sort of sneakily got past the fan fiction elements. If you don't know, it's a multiverse story where people pretty much got to vote for which version of Batman wins a fight. But they found a way to make actually a pretty interesting story go with that, so I've been pretty pleased with that, surprisingly so. I haven't really liked Countdown all that much, but Countdown Arena has been a lot of fun. Shadow Pack number 20 is coming out. I think this is an extremely underrated series. It deals with a lot of magical characters in the DC universe. It hasn't really tied in to Countdown or any of that stuff, so if that chased you off, don't be scared picking up Shadow Pact. Let's move on to Wildstorm. We got World of Warcraft number 2 coming out. I've never played World of Warcraft. My imagination creates a world where the people that play World of Warcraft are scary. Prove me wrong. Send me an email at Tom at Around Comics and tell me how awesome World of Warcraft is. There's a comic book about it. It's got a Jim Lee cover. It's got a Samwise Didier cover. Wanted to mention it because I know it's popular. Let's go to IDW, where we got Doctor Who Classics number 1 coming out. For all you Doctor Who fans, break out your scarves. start talking like Tom Baker. Let's get it on. It's reprints of the original Doctor Who series that came out, slightly recolored. It's got sort of remastered. Only problem is, not the original price. It's $3.99, like all IDW books. So, I guess, don't get too excited. Let's move on to Marvel. We have Captain Marvel, the miniseries from Brian Reed and Lee Weeks. Number one, the second printing is coming out. I was pleasantly surprised by the first issue. So if you missed out on the first issue, second issue coming out this week, pick it up if you can. We got Immortal Iron Fist number 11, the Brubaker Faction Anja storyline continuing. Fantastic book. If you're not on this, get on it immediately. We have Marvel Holiday Special 2007. If you like the holidays, you like anthologies, this is your type of thing. If you hate anthologies, don't come to me because I love anthologies. We have Marvel Illustrated Iliad number 1 by Roy Thomas. And Roy, I know Roy Thomas is excited about this because he told me himself that he's excited about it. We got Wolverine Firebreak One-Shot. This is a one-shot from Mike Carey. Excellent writer. He's been doing a great job with Ultimate Fantastic Four. And Scott Collins, who recently signed an exclusive with DC, so I think they're trying to get this out. But it's a $3.99 one-shot. If you like those creators, you might want to check this story out. We also have, coming out from Marvel Knights, Captain America, The Chosen number 5. I read the first one. I really liked it, but I read a lot of great reviews about it, but I haven't seen a ton of stuff about that recently, so who knows how it's going. As far as the independents, other independents go, we got Ape Entertainment, Subculture number 4 coming out. It's about nerds, might cut close to the bone, so don't get it if you're sensitive. We have from Avatar Press, Black Summer Alpha, rap cover. Black Summer Alpha collects issues number 0 and issues number 1 of Black Summer. Those haven't sold out, so you might actually be able to find them, but 0 and 1 together for $2.99. I've been loving that series. I think it's a big step up as far as art goes for the Avatar books. What else do we have going on? We have from Evil Twin. This is actually technically a trade, but I want to mention it because I'm a bit of a whore for this book. I love Action Philosophers. Action Philosophers Giant Size Thing Volume 3 is coming out. Pick it up if you love philosophy. If you love learning, you should pick that book up. And that's pretty much what I got going on this week. We got Virgin Comics. I want to mention Nicolas Cage's Voodoo Child, number 6. I can't believe there's 6 of those. I've often heard that I kind of look like Nicolas Cage. Which I'm not angry about that, because you know, Nicolas Cage is kind of an okay-looking guy, so I don't want to get too sensitive about that. It bothers me because he's also in a tremendous amount of horrible movies, but that's neither here nor there. So, there you go. You got the new releases for the week. Go out, pick them up. There's other stuff. There's tons of stuff I only barely touched. The tip of the iceberg. There's tons of independents. So go get them. And I'll see you later.
That'll take care of another Monday edition of Around Comics, the Comic Culture Podcast. Make sure to come back on Thursday for Around Comics, the Comic Culture Roundtable. It's an informal and entertaining roundtable discussing the world of comics and pop culture. You can visit us online at www.aroundcomics.com. You can contact the show via email at info@aroundcomics.com. You can also visit us at MySpace and ComicSpace. And if you are inclined to do so, you can leave us a review at the iTunes Music Store. Thank you for listening today and making Around Comics your source for the best comic book news, reviews, and opinions. We'll be back again on next Monday for another edition of Around Comics, the Comic Culture Podcast. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in and around comics. Well, you got my left foot on. I know that you don't love me. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics.
Any reproduction, retransmission, or rebroadcast without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2007. Got my love, baby, now you gone. I know you didn't love me, baby. I know you did me wrong. Let me come home. Oh, yeah. Oh, I got to love you. Oh, I got to love you, baby. Everybody got my love, now they gone. I'm a loving baby one more time. I'm a loving baby one more time.